Folks, I need you to keep your seats and remain calm. The situation is mostly under control. We're working to get the situation under control. There's no need to panic, please. Please don't panic. Don't go rushing for the exits. Everything is going to be okay. This whole area, this whole sanctuary, should be safe, but it's been declared a hazard zone right now. You see, we have a containment breach. We have a leak. God is leaking out into the world. We've got to put a stop to this. This is dangerous. I mean, this is frightening. God is just gonna seep out there. And we have no way of stopping it. This substance that we're talking about, it's powerful. It's uncontrollable, uncontainable. It's unpredictable. When a person comes in contact with this God thing, we have no way of knowing how that will affect them. But we know that they'll probably never be the same again. Never. It's unstoppable. Watch out. If this sucker goes airborne, we've got no weapon against it. We've got no way of containing it. We've got no power in the face of it. We have got to get this God thing back under our control. Now you chuckle and you laugh, because it seems kind of ridiculous. But isn't that exactly what we've been doing for millennia and millennia? Isn't that exactly what the story of people's relationship with God is all about? God is powerful! Ooh, we better protect ourselves. We'll claim, in almost every instance, people will claim that the protections, the barriers between humanity and God are in place to keep God holy. Well, guess what, folks? I don't think God needs our help being holy. I think God's got that one covered. I think the protections that we place between God and us are to keep us safe because we're afraid. That's what was going on with Moses and the Israelites. Moses goes up on Mount Sinai. He's in the presence of God. That's scary. That's uncontrollable. That's unpredictable. And he comes back down and his face is glowing. He's got this residual afterglow from having talked with God. And the people say, "Holy cow, cover that up. Put that away. We can't be that close to God. You intercede for us. You go talk to God and come back and tell us what God said. And we'll be okay with that." But we don't want God's glory, God's presence in our midst. It's dangerous. So Moses puts a veil over his face. And he will speak with God without the veil, and then he comes back out, he puts the veil over his face. When the temple's built, and when the new temple is rebuilt after the first one's destroyed, this same idea is translated in the very construction of the temple. The Holy of Holies, which is the presence of God on earth, is in the very inner center sanctuary of the temple. And between the Holy of Holies and the rest of the world, there is a curtain, a veil. And it exists to keep God holy, or maybe to keep us safe. Because if the presence of God gets out, it's going to run amok in the world, and we don't know how to stop it. And Jesus' life and ministry and death and resurrection are about removing those barriers. We think that God places barriers, you know, to keep God holy. They're barriers we place to keep us safe. Jesus lifts the corner of the veil in the story of the Transfiguration, and the disciples get a glimpse of what's going on, a glimpse of who he is. And what's the first thing they want to do? Build a building! Contain it! Keep us safe! Keep God in that box! According to the Gospels, at the moment of Jesus' death, what happens? The curtain in the temple is ripped into from the top to the bottom. Gotta love that phrase, from the top to the bottom, right? It means two things. It means the whole kit and caboodle from top to bottom. And it means, in a cosmological worldview where God is on top and we are on the earth at the bottom, it means from God to us, ripped in two. That curtain, that protection between God and humanity, completely obliterated. Now, Don't read into this. Jesus did die once and for all time. But that doesn't mean that's the last time a barrier was put between us and God. Oh, sure, the early church had much more direct kind of experience of God and was very, very dangerous because they were in God's presence a lot. But what starts to happen? Start to build structure. At first, people met in people's houses, wherever they could gather. God's presence was everywhere, and they knew that, and they felt that. But pretty soon, they started building church buildings to keep God inside them. And pretty soon, they started ordaining clergy. Oh, the horrors. Because what's a clergy person? It's a person to intercede with God for everyone else. That's how it comes to function. I mean, at first, sure, it's people to distribute the elements and people to pray and people to lead, but it very quickly becomes the professional God intercessory. That's my job, right? You pay me to talk to God so y'all don't have to. And very quickly, clergy get more and more powerful and more intercessors. We get ourselves a pope, right? Now, he's the only one that can talk to God and then tell the clergy what God said and then the clergy tell the other people what God said. And we've constructed barriers again. We've built walls, we've rehung the curtains, we've put the veils back over our faces so we don't need to see God, because God is scary. We take a big, huge roll of caution, do not cross tape, and we tape off everything that has anything to do with God. So we get a Protestant Reformation, and Martin Luther says, oh no, we got direct access to God. And guess what? Builds back up. Wesley, our own founder of the Methodist tradition, says, you know what, this priest stuff is good for some things, but we want to interact with God throughout the week, not just on Sunday. And we're gonna interact with God in the faces of the poor and the outcast, and he starts something new, and it gets built back up. Every once in a while, there are those people that recognize that part of what Jesus did was say, you don't need anyone or anything to stand between you and God. Go ahead and be scared. Go ahead and be uncomfortable. But the barriers that you've placed between you and God are not God's. They're yours. And we're going to tear them down. And every once in a while, the Martin Luthers and the John Wesleys and all hundreds and thousands of other people rip those barriers down, take down the walls, tear the curtains, lift the veils, cut the police tape, and let God out for a little while, let God in for a little while. And then we very carefully, very cautiously, build those barriers right back up. Because it's frightening. We try to contain God in lots of ways. We try to keep God inside our building. Close the doors. Keep God in as best we can. That way we can think about God when we come here on our terms. And then we can go back out there and we don't have to worry about God quite so much. And we want to keep God confined to 60 minutes. Because that's God time, and the rest of the week, the other 6.5 days, that's our time. We got other things we got to do. We're going to keep God confined to that. We're going to keep God confined in really neat, nice, concise prayers. 4-line call to worship. Call, response, call, response. If it's going to be 6, they have to be really short. And the morning prayer needs to be small enough to fit in the space allotted on the bulletin. Or even worse now, it's got to fit on the screen in a minimum of 36-point font so y'all can see it, and I don't want to have to click in between in the middle of the prayer because it's distracting. Got to organize it. Got to structure it. Got to have hymns. We can't sing too many verses of the hymns. And we all have to sing the same words to the hymns. And we all have to say the same words to the Lord's Prayer. Heaven help us if we get a different Protestant in here who says sins instead of trespasses or debts and debtors. What is wrong with those people? We have got to contain and regiment God so that it can be comfortable, not for God, for us. Comfortable for us. Søren Kierkegaard is one of my top 3 favorite theologians. Yes, I'm an incredible nerd. I rank my favorite theologians. But he writes this about Christian theology. He says, the matter's quite simple. The Bible is very easy to understand. But we Christians are a bunch of scheming swindlers. He's writing this in the 19th century. This is not a new thing. We pretend to be unable to understand it because we know very well that the minute we do understand, we are obliged to act accordingly. Take any words in the New Testament and forget everything except pledging yourself to act accordingly. My God, you will say, if I do that, my whole life will be ruined. How would I ever get on in the world? Herein lies the real place of Christian scholarship. Christian scholarship is the church's prodigious invention to defend itself against the Bible, to ensure that we can continue being good Christians without the Bible coming too close. Oh, priceless scholarship, what would we do without you? Dreadful it is to fall into the hands of the living God. You're going to think that I added this to the lectionary, but here it is again. The Irresistible Revolution by Shane Claiborne. And in a passage from this book that was also reprinted in Relevant Magazine, he has a whole section called Jesus Wrecked My Life. And it's all about how, he says, you know, that he was living the good life. I had it together. I used to be cool. And then I met Jesus, and he wrecked my life. The more I read the gospel, the more it messed me up, turning everything I believed in, valued, and hoped for upside down. I'm still recovering from my conversion. I know it's hard to imagine, but in high school, I was elected prom king. I was in the in crowd, popular, ready to make lots of money and buy lots of stuff on the upward track to success. I'd been planning to go to med school. Like a lot of folks, I wanted a job where I could do as little work as possible for as much money as possible. I figured anesthesiology would work. Just put folks to sleep with a little happy gas and let others do the dirty work. Then I could buy lots of stuff I didn't need. The American dream. And then he says, he was working hard, and he couldn't help but hope that there was something more. But he thought about leaving everything to follow Jesus like the apostles and hitting the road with nothing but my sandals and my staff, but I wasn't sure where I could pick up a staff. And he talks about how when he really tries to follow Jesus, all that goes out the window. When he really tries to do this God thing, it's dangerous, it's unpredictable, it changes his life. It makes worship messy. It makes life together as Christians messy because it's unpredictable. It makes life together with other people even messier because they're like, what are you going on about? God is dangerous. God is scary. God is uncontrollable force of life seeping out into the world no matter how much we try to curtain that off. But here's what I believe. I believe we're ready for it anyway. Anybody else believe that? Anybody else believe we're ready? I got a couple hands. All right. Anybody else believe we're ready to let God out into the world, to let God into us, into our lives, even though it's going to be scary? I got two. Come on. Don't make me start over. Okay. Here we go. We're ready to do that. All right, George, I saw your hand up the longest. Come on up. Give me a hand, George. We're going to cut down the barriers. We're going to let God out. Anybody else? Come on up. Come on. We're going to let God out in the world. We've only got one piece of tape cut. Come on, folks. Come on. All right, Margaret. Here we go. We got this one over here. Don't cut the screen. Don't cut the screen. We're going to let God out into the world. We're going to tear down the tape. We're going to rip down the walls. We're going to tear the curtains in two. And we're going to let God out. Anybody else? Anybody else? I'm the one with the head cold. Come on up, Lois. I believe that it might be scary. It might be messy. It might pull us out of our safety zones. I'll get that stuff off the altar. How about that? Cut it in half. There you go. It might not be... Oh, yeah, Linda, go ahead. Get that one on the cross. Other cross. Yes. We don't want to contain God. We don't want to keep God in a box, not even a box as big as this room. Not even a box as big as the Christian tradition itself. We want to let God out there where it's unsafe, where it's unpredictable, and let God run wild. Now, the rest of y'all aren't off the hook. As in your bulletins, you have a little piece of caution tape. Some of them get cut off, and they don't say caution. It's not California tape if it's just the C or the no tape if you flip it upside down. It's caution tape. And that represents whatever it is in your life that is a barrier that's been put up between you and God. You might have put it up. Somebody else might have put up. I can guarantee you God didn't put it up. But church might have. I might have put it up. I don't know. Something that holds you back. Maybe it's confining God in a place of worship. Maybe it's thinking about God in a really particular way that limits you and narrows you in your relationship with God. But whatever it is, I want you to think of it at that piece of caution tape. And as we enter the time of Lent, I don't want you to give up chocolate. Definitely don't want anybody to give up chocolate. I don't want you to give up red meat or fatty food. I don't want you to give up swearing. I don't want you to give up television. Not to say that you might not lead healthier, more fulfilled lives if you do. But I want you to give up that thing on the piece of caution tape. I want you to try to give up that thing that is the barrier between you and God. And I don't want you to give it up for 40 days. I want you to give it up for 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, 70, 80. That much should cover pretty much everybody. However many you've got left. I want you to give up that thing that you've placed or that somebody's placed between you and God. I'd like to tell you that the situation is under control, that we're putting God back in that tight, nice, neat little box. No, I wouldn't. I'd like to tell you that the situation is totally uncontrolled. I'd like to tell you that despite our best efforts, God is out there in the world running amok, that we haven't been able to contain God, that nobody's been able to contain God, and that the God contagion is spreading like wildfire. But that's not entirely the case either, because we have managed in a great many ways to keep God in a box. We have managed in a great many ways to keep the walls up, to keep the curtains intact, to keep the veils over our faces, to keep the caution tape between us and God. And it's our job to get out there and to tear it down. Tear it down for us, tear it down for others. So that is what we're going to go do. Get your scissors. Get your hands for ripping or for lifting the veil. Get your pickaxe and hammer for tearing down the walls. Because we're in the business of spreading the God contagion wherever we go. It's a mighty one. It's an awesome one. And it's a great one. So let's sing about how great that God contagion is in the words of our closing hymn, number 77. We're going to sing 1, 2, and 4.